All right. So this is our last lesson in the Alelon book that Kimberly Cummings wrote for us. And it's been fun to use all these different scriptures and study the one another's. I hope that you've all learned something and feel like it's been a great time to even get to know one another in this study as well. And I think it's pretty neat that it's appropriate. We actually close our lesson with the most practical outpouring. And I'm thinking in terms of most practical because hospitality is what we are now talking about. And of course, humility. Those are the last two one another's. Excuse me. I'm going to go ahead and open us in prayer. And hopefully my voice will hold up. Lord, thank you. Thank you for this morning. Thank you for each of these precious ladies that come and that we are able to join together and sing Gloria in Excelsis Deo. Lord, thank you for those words, glory to God in the highest. What a wonderful time of year that we can celebrate your birth, and what a wonderful time that we can as women come together and encourage one another, Lord, in this season of just praising you. And may it be all year long that we bring our thoughts always to you and lift up our praise to you, that it not just be on Sundays or Wednesdays, but let it be our daily life, Lord, that we give you the glory. We ask you to bless our time together and use your words, Lord, to speak to our ladies in your precious name. Amen. Well, I love the quote on page 144 that Kimberly starts with, where she says, "Hospitality is one of the ways that we have the privilege of showing God's extravagant grace, of taking us in as strangers to the gospel, to become his friends." That's a wonderful quote. And I'm going to add to that quote, to become his family. When we think about that, we are family, and as sisters in Christ, this is what we have, that wonderful privilege because of God's grace. Well, what comes to your mind when you hear the word hospitality? I'm just going to take a few hands here, if anybody. Robin?
Work.
Okay. There you go. That's an honest felt. Exactly. Okay. Somebody else. What comes to your mind? And I can imagine the after work, too. It's not just the preparing, but it's cleaning the dishes or whatever. Right. Who else?
What? Go on what she said. Energy.
Yes, that's a good word. You're right, Stacy. That's great. Somebody else. Kenita.
Openness.
Good. Okay. Exactly. Andy.
Reciprocation. When I love it when people are hospitable to me, it ministers to me a lot.
Very much. Yes, that's a good word too. Wonderful. Anybody else? Any other thoughts?
Coffee.
What is it?
Coffee.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually quite the center of a lot of hospitality, at least for me. You come to my house, you're going to get coffee, at least offered coffee. Coffee and tea.
Vulnerability.
That's a good word. Yeah, I like that. Sacrifice. Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome.
Okay. These are all really good words.
I like the help me.
Vulnerability.
Because some people may not feel that their stuff is adequate to be show hospitality.
Right.
And that's a big step out.
Yes. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that today, even in our lesson here. Any other thoughts?
How about in the negative sense when Jesus says, Martha, Martha?
Yes, Martha, Mary.
Just what to avoid.
Exactly. Yeah, sometimes we're too focused on getting everything just right that we miss the purpose. And that's exactly a good one. Kenita?
And it's not entertaining.
Right. I have that on my notes here. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. And I think that's what most worldly people and even believers do think of. We think of entertaining. So, we think, oh, we have to have just the right home, just the right setting of places, table places or whatever they're called. What's that called? Settings. Whatever. I mean, just the atmosphere has to be just right when we think of hospitality. Oh, you know, my house isn't ready. My house is too small. We have a lot of excuses. And we think of just the whole idea of entertaining. Or maybe I'm not a good cook. You know, that's another one. Maybe I just, what do I serve? What do I do? So we think of it in terms of that. What about a fancy home? Do we think, well, my home's not big enough or my home's not pretty enough? So we have those thoughts that come to mind. And I think even just in terms of the world, we think of hospitality. Sometimes we think of things like impressing others, social gatherings where it's, you know, they come for their cocktail parties or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of things that come to our mind. How about showing off your cooking or your decorating skills? That's something that came to my mind, too, when we think about hospitality. But if we look at Christian hospitality, ladies, we're going to see quite a contrast. And hopefully even in our lesson, you learned some of this. We're going to see one that's humble, sacrificial, and serving. And do you realize the link that we have of showing hospitality is such a bridge to the gospel? I mean, if we do hospitality just to show off our homes or our skills or inviting people in just to visit, there's a purpose there that's only so deep. It's just shallow. But instead, if we as believers look at Christian as hospitality, that we take it beyond our just superficial looks, but into what is the purpose, is to bring someone into the faith or share the gospel. Hospitality is really taking love beyond the circle of friends that we have to other believers who we don't know, and with a spirit of unselfish attitude. And I'll add to that, believers and unbelievers both, but it's the unselfish attitude. And think about that, ladies. The first Christians were marked by enthusiastic evangelism, and the outcome was the growth of the church. So hospitality played a key role. Without hospitality, there would be no first church. I mean, that's where churches met. They met in homes. They used their homes to share the gospel, to spread the love and the what's going on with what Christ gave us to share. So it was indispensable for the traveling evangelist as well as protection for those who faced persecution. So those who were going from home to home or those who were fleeing from their home, they needed hospitality. They needed to be welcomed into a home. So the first two centuries, nearly all the Christian churches across the Roman Empire were characterized by loving Christian hospitality. And the church in Rome was actually noted most of all. Obviously, hospitality was very important to Peter and Paul and John and the author of Hebrews because they made it a command. And why is it so closely connected to Christianity and considered a virtue? Oftentimes we think of hospitality as somebody's gift. Oh, they have the gift of hospitality. That's their gift. But we forget sometimes to realize this is a command for all of us. We're not all called to do the exact way of hospitality, but we are all called to be hospitable. Lost my place here. Sorry about that. Sometimes we need a fresh vision, too, to awaken our interest in the importance of this command. To understand hospitality, we have to take it back really to the context of brotherly love. And that's what we're going to look at today. Hospitality by Alexander Strock, his quote here, calls it a valuable jewel in the crown of Christian life and service. Now, I'm going to give a little plug. This is a short little book, but it is a treasure. We actually have about three copies. I emailed Russell, and he says we have three copies at the bookstore. So on Sunday, if you want one, go by and get one. But it's just a really great tool. I've used it to actually mentor someone through it. I've used it many times, but in this little book, he lays out for us not only the scriptural qualifications for the command, but a lot of information on how important it is as a tool and a launching pad for the gospel. And that's really what hospitality should be. It should be our launching pad for the gospel. Hospitable means loving strangers, and I think we studied some of those verses in our book. It comes from philos, I'm not sure how the Greek is, sorry about that, and xenos, which means fond of guests. It means friendly and welcoming. So it's hard to be hospitable if you're not friendly, right? Definitely. Strauch asks, what is the supernatural love relationship between brothers and sisters and the intimate connection of this love relationship to hospitality? And if you, I'll read this for you, but if you have your Bibles, you can open to 2 Corinthians 4, 5 through 11. It says, for what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, has shone in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may be manifested in our bodies. We are the living testimony in our bodies and in our hands and arms and everything we do as a body of Christ individually and corporately. So who is our family? Our family is a brotherhood and sisterhood derived from Jesus Christ. We're not just merely brothers and sisters from our circumstances or common interests, but we share the life of Jesus, and we manifest Jesus' life to others because of what the cross brings to us. Hebrews 3:1 calls us holy brothers, and I like that, holy brothers who share a heavenly calling. We share the same unbreakable family bond. That's unfathomable sometimes when we think about that. Think of the early church again in Acts 2. And it gives, in Acts 2, gives some specific ways in the New Testament of their relationship being knit together in the family bond. The term brothers, brethren, or sister occurs 250 times throughout the New Testament, mostly in Paul's letters. 1 Peter 2:17 directly refers to Christians as the brotherhood. How did they become brothers and sisters? Because of the gospel that was lived out in action and in demonstration. So from the start, Christianity was a missionary movement. Think about that, ladies. Matthew 28 records where the Great Commission, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. We need to be that mission-minded, and that's done through these relationships. Only the most intimate of human relationships can express the love and closeness that exists between God and man because of Christ's incarnation and death. The unsaved cannot share in that relationship. And I think about that so often when you hear like a brotherhood or a sisterhood, but we carry that bond into eternity. I was just recently talking with a man who's a fireman, and he was saying how as brothers, they, you know, as firemen, they call themselves brothers. Or think of that law enforcement. I mean, they all look out for each other. They all, for years, they can connect with each other, even beyond. I know I had a sister who was a fireman, her husband was a fireman, and they called it a brotherhood. But yet they don't carry that on into the future in that bond like we do as believers. You know, even fraternities or sororities and all those kinds of things, it's a temporary bond. It's not an eternal bond. Well, what are some ways that the New Testament church exhibited itself as a family? And there's lots of references. I didn't write these references down, but just anybody have some ways that they want to just raise their hand and add? One of the things I couldn't come up with, they greeted one another with a holy kiss. That was one of the things. What are some things that they did as a family in the New Testament?
They broke bread together.
Yeah, they shared a meal. That's right. They shared a meal together. They shared in their homes. They ate together. How about
prayed together?
They prayed together. Absolutely.
Washed their feet.
Yeah, they served each other, washing their feet. That's right. Others?
They collected money for the poor.
Yes, exactly. They gave their material possessions. They think about even, too, they cared for their widows. They did things like that. Even they provided principles of conduct with each other. And here's an interesting one. They disciplined their members if needed. Think about that. We just had a church discipline issue on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And that's a way of showing love. It's not just being hurtful. It's a way of bringing someone back into the fold. So disciplining if needed. And think, too, that the family of God transcends all national, racial, and social boundaries. That is beautiful. We don't have that stigma of what the world's, you know, the woke ideas, because we are all brothers and sisters of Christ, no matter what our national, racial, or social boundaries are. Even our family roots are rooted in oneness with Christ as the elder brother. Romans 8:29 says that. And survival also depended upon participation of the family, especially in that early church. They needed each other to participate with one another and survive. They cared for one another. C.S. Lewis says, Christians survived because they cared exclusively for the love of the brethren, and they stopped their ears to the opinion of the pagan society all around them. That's an interesting quote. Hospitality became one of the most significant practical expressions of family and the birthmark of Christianity. Not only our brotherhood derives its source from Christ, but our love does. When you think about that, that's why we do that. It's not just because we're related by Christ, but because of our love. And of course, would somebody read John 13:34-35, John 13. This is a verse we should all have memorized by now. It was our very first verse. Raise your hand when you have that. John 13:34-35.
A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, and also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Yes, and that's the command. That's what we were known for. That's what the early church was known for. We should be known for as well. A new commandment. That's the commandment that was not new. No, it wasn't brand new in the sense that it was new, but it was new in the sense that we saw that, that the early church saw that as their badge. That was their mark. 1 Corinthians 13 is another good one. Let me turn there. 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 3. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. And of course, Paul gives the descriptions of love. And if you jump down to verse 13, so now faith, hope, and love abide these three, but the greatest of these is love. So that love is really what is the mark of Christianity. That's what should be. We do the other things, but it's based upon love. Christianity's teaching on love is unparalleled in the history of religion. It caused the rapid expansion of the early growth of the church. Hebrews 13, 1 and 2. In fact, let's turn to that one too. Somebody want to read Hebrews 13, 1 and 2?
Let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware.
That's right. And notice how the command of brotherly love is followed by the admonition of not neglecting the hospitality. They go together. You can't just pull one away. Paul speaks to the Thessalonians church, the Thessalonian church, in praise of their brotherly love. And we often read verse 8, but let's look at verse 9, 1 Thessalonians 4, 9 through 9 and 10. Sorry, my tongue's getting tied here. 1 Thessalonians 4, 9 and 10. And I'll go ahead and read that one here. Now concerning brotherly love, you have no need for anyone to write you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love one another. For that indeed is what you are doing to all the brethren throughout Macedonia. But we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more. Isn't that a beautiful admonition? Not just you're doing a great job, you're doing a good job, but do it more. Romans 12:10 is another good verse. Somebody want to read Romans 12:10? Call it out when you get it.
Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one
That's
another.
That's great. Yes, love one another, brotherly affection. My version says outdo one another. It's kind of like a contest. I love that. Spring each other on. What you've done, I'm going to do it even more. And we've talked about some of these verses in our one another's, and hopefully it takes your mind back to some of the examples we've even talked about. And then, of course, 1 Peter 4, 9 in our book. What about 1 Peter 4, 8? Let's look at that one for just a moment.
Above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins.
Keep fervent. That's a beautiful verse. Love covers a multitude of sins. And we've kind of talked a little bit about that as well, is putting up with each other. But what, again, it comes back to love. It's not just tolerating, but it's love. 1 John 4:21 is another one, and we'll go ahead and keep going here. But James Moffat was a commentator, said that no church has any prospect of stability or chance of existence in the sight of God if it neglects brotherly love. I don't know if you've ever been to a church where there isn't much love and you kind of feel this, you know, they may have great teaching, but if there's no love, you feel kind of a little coldness there. And some people just really don't understand that connection, how important it is. And we need to show our love. Strauch says in his book, I don't think most Christians today understand how essential hospitality is to fanning the flames of love and strengthening the Christian family. And that's so true. Hospitality is what fans the flames. So how does hospitality flesh out in love? Well, let's think about that. We talked about this earlier. We share some of our most personal and prized possessions, right? It's costly. It's costly to entertain. It's, or, you know, have hospitable. It's costly because some things are take time. It takes our energy. It takes our home, our finances, our food, our privacy, our time, basically our lives. Some things are tangible and some things are intangible. Think about that. We give out our tangible of food, or we give, you know, coffee, whatever we have tangible. But in this ministry of hospitality, we also share friendship. We share acceptance. We share fellowship. We share comfort, refreshment, and a deep, rich love. We listen to someone who may need to share their hurts or fears. We share scripture. We share kindness. Think about when you've been given a chance to be with somebody and they've opened their home, or you've been with them in a place where you've been feeling they're being hospitable to you. You have a vulnerability. I like that word someone brought up, vulnerability. That's a great word. Again, it's if we don't open up our homes or our lives, we're only living hospitality in theory and not, and will come across superficial. So it has to be real, ladies. It has to be something where we put our hearts into this. Proverbs 14:1 says, "The wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands." Few women are really aware of how much influence they have on their surroundings. Regardless of our marital status or living arrangements, all of us women have some type of house. That house may be our immediate family, our neighborhood, our workplace, our school, our church, or a nation. We all have some kind of a house that we are able to affect others through. Through our attitudes, through our words, and our behavior, we have the power to bless and build the lives of those around us, don't we? We also have the power to tear down and destroy them. Think about that. Power through us as our foolishness, or what, are we being wise or foolish? It's a great proverb. The home was the natural setting for proclaiming Christ. Well, we may use the excuse, we have churches today, so we don't really need to invite people into our home, in the same way that the church did, early church did. However, opening our homes is one of the best way to share the gospel. Many unsaved may not enter the doors of a church. They may not come to the church and may not be able to come through. Maybe they're feeling intimidated and inadequate, but or just not interested. And yet they could come to your home for a meal. They might come to your home for in a non-threatening atmosphere. And even I think about just inviting our neighbors, even they see you have a Bible study at your house, or they see you have something going on. Invite them. Just invite them. Sadly, most of us don't know our neighbors. When was the last time you reached out to your neighbors? Think about that. That's a hard one. Sometimes we're convicted. We live in these homes where you pull in your garage and close the door, or you really don't come a whole lot in contact as we used to. So that's interesting.
You know, when I was growing up in prehistoric times, when you went to a neighbor's house, they always said, "Come in."
Sure, sure.
Not today.
Right. It's
you
not as... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How many of us really go to the door and answer, or we peek out the hole and, "No, I don't want to talk to him." We've done that before. I don't want to have another solar salesman.
They say statistically the reason that's happened is because they quit building houses with porches.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a good comment, Connie.
They always had porches.
Porches, yeah.
What did they do after dinner? Sit on the porch.
The front porch.
Sit on the porch.
Yeah.
The kids all outside.
Yeah.
Quit making outdoor porches.
That's true. And I think of some fond memories of my childhood where we sat on the porch or we played outside. We knew our neighbors.
So it's effort.
Exactly. It does.
That's true.
Yep. Well, the holiday season is a great opportunity. Think about how you can even just introduce yourself. Take cookies to a neighbor. Go walk up and knock on their door and just wish them a Merry Christmas. Invite them to our Christmas program, or now that that's done, invite them to the Christmas Eve service or the Christmas Day service. Invite them in any ways. But even just sometimes just making that connection where you just, "How are you doing?" You know, I just walked up to a neighbor two doors down and said goodbye to them because they're moving. And I saw the husband out there loading his truck, and it was sweet. I said goodbye. We're going to miss him. And he reminded me of how much he appreciated the progressive dinner that I had planned in our neighborhood. Several years ago when we moved into our home, it was a new home built at the same time a whole bunch of all our street and a couple streets over were built. And I thought, what a great way to go meet your neighbors. So I organized, and it wasn't just all at my home, but I organized and talked to the neighbors. How would you guys like to do a progressive dinner? And nobody really had ever done that. They didn't know what it really was. They loved the idea. We had probably 22 ladies and husbands, men, women, whatever, all come. And it was just a fun way. We went from one house for hors d'oeuvres. We went to another house for salads, another house for the main dish, another house for dessert. They loved it. It was just a great, and they still remember this. This man particularly thanked me. He says, "I just never forget that." Even the first Gentile converts were converted in a home. And we think back with Peter when he had his vision on his rooftop and he was directed to the house of Cornelius, who invited his whole family to hear his message. And in Acts 10, 22 to 20, 23 to 35, the whole story is there, where the Gentiles heard the good news that day. And it was because of the excitement that God told Peter to go speak with Cornelius. And what did Cornelius do? He invited everyone into his home. And that was really the whole Gentile converts, the beginning of all that. Well, church love should not just be on Sundays or in the church parking lot. And I think sometimes we get caught into, you know, we just leave it for Sunday mornings and visit out in the parking lot. But we have to carry that on to our neighbors and to our family, to our extended families and strangers in a way that can bring the gospel in action. We can be a witness, as I've said. When I was first married, I had an interesting opportunity, and I'll share this with you. We lived across the street from an elderly woman named Alita, who in North Hollywood, she had no family. She was married but divorced quite young, and she was in her 80s. And I remember at the time, we had been kind of ministering to her, stopping to see Grant would take something over and help her in some way, and whether it was taking her some groceries or something like that. But one point we invited her to come to the Christmas concert at Grace Community when we attended there. And she, I won't give you the long story, but she hadn't taken a bath in years. I mean, she was one of these ladies who lived very much in seclusion, but she loved watching us. She loved our interaction and stuff. So one of the things that I did is I opened up my home and I said, "Do you want to come take a bath in my tub?" And she did. She came over. That was really a humbling thing to do, because she was an amazing lady, very stubborn to the gospel, didn't want to really be open in her heart. But she actually came to the concert. We invited her to our son's first birthday. She came over. She'd never even been invited to a birthday party. And this was a woman who lived a very, very lonely life. But think of the way that, you know, we were able to minister through hospitality to her. And long story short, years later, she did actually become a Christian right on her deathbed. So it touched me because it was one of those stories that we've been sharing for years and no fruit. And then at the very end of her life, Grant's mom came and actually gave her the gospel. And she said, "I want to go to heaven and I want to believe." So she, you know, we truly believe she was saved at the very end there. And think about those who just even we can minister to. Sometimes there's people who travel long distances to church. Are we being hospitable to them? We think about different ways that we can reach out. I know even when the Swartzes first came to Bakersfield, they didn't have a home here. They lived in Santa Clarita. We opened up our home. We said, "Hey, stay with us in the afternoon," because that's Steve had started the night service. And they had nowhere in the middle of the day to go, so come rest at our home. And that was how we got to know them. Think about how you can minister to families, even widows or older people who are lonely, those who are new to the area that don't know any others. Years ago, we invited a family of six. They had four children, and one of them had a severe handicap, a severe disability. And they stayed. We came invite them for lunch after church. And they kept staying, and they stayed for dinner. It was about 9 o'clock till they left. We didn't have a night service. It was like, okay, what? But, you know, we just said, we'll find food. We'll make it work. And you could tell that they were so hungry for hospitality. They were so hungry for fellowship, because that was a hard thing for them to take a four-year-old into a home who had a severe handicap like that, a severe disability. How about foreign exchange students? Have we thought about even inviting them? I know some of the ladies in our church have hosted those. I think of Kathy Bloxham. Those who've gone through a loss or a death, those who need housing. Darletta's home flooded one time. You all know the story. And, you know, she actually, I was checking on her home at the time and realized something was serious was going on because she was out of town. And I called her. I said, "I think you have some serious issues. Your home's..." I mean, I really saw the windows were foggy, and I thought something has happened indoors that wasn't right. So she came home. Her home had been flooded in probably 3 inches of water. Just a freak thing. And what did we do? We said, "Come stay with us." She stayed for a month, and then she went on to stay with other ladies in the church as well. I can think of another time of someone who was traveling through town. We actually had my son Daniel. He didn't even live at home at the time, but he had a college friend who he knew briefly, but not real well, but her car broke down on Highway 5, single young gal, and she had to have it towed to Bakersfield. He calls us and said, "Hey, can so-and-so come stay with you?" And sure, so they came in and stayed. She stayed a week till her car was fixed. You know, I mean, just having the heart of being ready for something like that. I remember Heather asked one time if a friend could come through. They had six children, and they were coming for a soccer tournament. Darling family. And we opened up our home. Sure, stay at our home. And And it just, it's a great way to show hospitality. There's so many ways that we can do that. Even just thinking about missionary families, we had different missionary families staying for weeks at a time with us, and that's a blessing because they don't have money for hotels. They need somewhere to stay, and we've had foreign visitors stay with us. We've had people from Malaysia, New Zealand, Ireland, Argentina, China. I can remember one time I got a call from Grant asking if we could, if I could, I wasn't even home. I was out of town with some girlfriends, but on my way home, asked if I could have this particular man and his, they were, what were they called? Chinese inspectors for the factory. And he wanted to have them at our home for dinner. Okay. So we had hurried, called the kids. Okay, straighten up quick and get ready. And mom's coming home. But meanwhile, we'll, you know, plan out a quick dinner. And it's interesting, years later, we had seen him in different occasions. And he still remembers that meal. And I was just so intimidated, thinking, I have nothing, no cooking skills other than just, I will serve my best. And he remembered that. That was so good. And this was a man who's eaten at many restaurants. I'm thinking, my food was nothing to compare, but it was the hospitality. It was the fact that he got to come in and bring men who didn't even speak English, he did, but to our home that just felt the warmth and the love of family. And it was opportunity to share the gospel. I mean, this is the time we do that. We share, we pray. We show them how we pray and how we say grace, and we thank the Lord and use that. Opportunities abound, ladies. We can't look at excuses and say, well, I don't have this or I don't have that time or any of that. These are commands that we are called to be hospitable. And we are called, and each one of us is going to display this in different ways. Some people will have seasons of life where they can do that. Some people won't. It's more of the opportunities that come. And the question is really, what are you willing to do? You know, maybe it's you can't invite someone in your home, but you can invite somebody out for coffee at a coffee shop or take them for lunch after church. There's many ways that we can be hospitable. And if we're commanded, then we have to obey with a heart that demonstrates tangible love to others. Hospitality is love in action. Our homes need to be a tool for the greater purpose to share Christ in a loving atmosphere. It's the home that puts our families on display and gives the witness to the gospel. Our children, like I said, regularly grew up having people in their home. They knew that it was always welcome people for a place to stay. I even had a friend whose husband was killed tragically in a very strange accident. And we opened up our home. She asked if her siblings could stay at our house. And then her son's fraternity, which we ended up having 20 of them show up, which we weren't prepared for, but we've made it work. And, you know, just ministering to them at a heart hurt when they're hurt. Our hearts hurt so badly, and that was just amazing. But we're living in an era that really has lost touch of inviting others into our home. You think about that. Martin Luther said, he calls our home a pulpit from which to teach God's truth and disciple people. Luther and Katie and his wife always had an open home. Luther and Katie, not and his wife. Luther and Katie. Yeah, I said that wrong. I'll make sure I'm recorded here, but right. They always had the open home of hospitality, and I'm sure you heard stories about that. Luke 14. Let's go ahead and read Luke 14, 12 to 14. Robin, would you read that when you get...
Then he also said to him who invited him, when you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, nor your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you, for you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just.
Wow, that's a great example of true hospitality. Serving others is humble and sacrificial. 1 Peter 4:9 says to show hospitality to one another without grumbling. Now here's a good key there, ladies. What's our attitude? Our attitude is just as important as our action. Without grudging, as a Greek means without murmurs. Without complaining of the hardship of doing it, of the time, the expense, and the trouble. And I can admit, that didn't start with my attitude. I was not raised to be hospitable. And so for me, it was a challenge. It was a stretch when my husband always had a hospitable heart and said, can we invite Alita to come over? Or, you know, people would come over. It's like, oh, okay. Really, it was a learning, but it's also the grumbling. How many times have we done the dishes and gone the food, you know, and there are people are ready to come and you're, oh, why did he invite them over or what? You know, we're complaining in our mind. I see smiles out there, I know. It's exactly what happens. Our attitude, we have to do it without grumbling. It greatly enhances the value of hospitality that it can be done on our part with entire cheerfulness. One of the duties involved in it is to make the guest happy. And this can be done in no other way than by showing him that he's welcome. That's a quote that I read. I thought that's good. We have to have a welcoming heart, a welcoming attitude. We touched on some of the reasons why we don't practice hospitality. Let's just review those. So what someone said, anybody want to throw out why we don't practice hospitality?
Your house is not nice enough.
Okay, we use our house as my house is too small, maybe it's not pretty or decorated or we don't have the resources. What's some other reasons?
Too busy.
Too busy, that's a really good one, yes. Time. Lack of time. Okay, somebody else? Any other reasons why we neglect this?
Too tired,
that's a good one, yeah.
No desire,
okay. How about lack of examples? Who do we have in our lives that are examples of hospitality? Sometimes, I know for me, I had a wonderful lady who was a Christian mom to me, and she was very hospitable, and I learned from her. I just watched her example, and that's really how I got to learn. How about too focused on spending time and resources on ourselves? Sometimes we're so busy spending things on ourselves that even if we have resources, those are overcommitted. So there's some good reasons why we make excuses, but what's the application to this? Well, what are some ways that we can practice hospitality? How about hosting missionaries in your home, contributing, even if you can't host them in your home, maybe contributing towards them staying in a hotel? Hosting a game night, that's not really that difficult. Invite somebody over for games, that would be fun. Video night, having a tea, taking someone out to lunch or coffee. There's a lot of ways we can actually apply this. How about studying it together? That's something that I was really challenged. The little book on hospitality by Strauch, Hospitality Commands, really challenged me. And I studied this with a young lady one day. She went and applied it right away. She invited these younger gals over, and just a great way to understand the command. And how about praying about it and calendaring it? Sometimes we just say, oh yeah, you know, someday I'll do that. Go ahead and put it on the calendar. Say, I'm going to invite so-and-so over next week, or I'm going to put it on my calendar. Invite a leader over. How about your pastors or your leaders? That's something that oftentimes we think, oh, they're probably always invited to someone's home. They're actually not. There's a lot of leaders that aren't. People kind of assume that they're invited over to other places, but get to know them. That's one of the ways over the years we've gotten to know some of our pastors. Just come on over. See us as we are, and this is us, you know, and we're going to be growing and learning, but, you know, don't focus so much on ourselves. I think we get our focus too much on ourselves. Hospitality is one of the most practical ways to express the love of Christ. And I have a list here, and I'm going to go ahead and read through. I know I'm running a little longer, but 10 reasons why you cannot afford to be hospitable. Or you can't afford to be, I'm sorry, let me say it again, it's negative. 10 reasons you cannot afford not to be hospitable. Okay, did I say that right? It's actually a positive, but double negative. Hospitality is one of the most practical ways to express the love of Christ. Hospitality reflects the hospitable heart of God. Hospitality is a great way to build unity and community with other believers. The Bible promises rewards for those who practice hospitality. Hospitality is one of the most effective ways to create a hunger for Christ in the hearts of non-believers. That's a good one. Hospitality helps deal with loneliness and depression. That's very practical. Hospitality helps to deal with selfishness. Hospitality helps to deal with materialism and get values. And help you get values that are eternal. If you have children, hospitality is a great way to cultivate in their heart a passion for ministry and a heart for serving other people. And then finally, God commands all to be hospitable. So maybe there's something in there that kind of spoke to you as far as just a great reminder. And again, ask how does God want to use me in other people's lives? And we're going to go on to, I'll skip some of these, but 1 Timothy 5:10 talks about having a reputation for good work. If she's brought up children, shown hospitality, that's one of the requirements for the widow in need, indeed. Romans 12:13 tells us to contribute to the needs of the saints. Titus 2:3, teaching what is good. What are we teaching? We need to teach others, teach the younger women to teach what is good and be an example. 1 Peter 5:5. Now we're going to jump ahead and just go into this section because I'm running short on time. But 1 Peter 5:5, we in our second half of the one another's talks to us to clothe ourselves with humility towards one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So again, we're wrapping up the one another's. And I like this way that Kimberly brought kind of to full circle about humility. We started off with watching Jesus wash the disciples' feet, and loving one another, and showing kindness and hospitality even in that. But here we come back to the humility part. To clothe yourself, is in our book, she talks too about this, to tie yourselves up with humility. That's what it means to clothe. It's putting on that apron or that cloak. And tied up so that the wind might not blow it off or the rain beat inside it. I like that, to tie it on. It's inseparably linked to a submissive attitude and a submissive mind. Only the humble will truly submit. Perhaps even more than today, people saw humility as a weakness and a cowardice even back then, and yet even they basically saw it and tolerated it as the involuntary submission of slaves. Only the slaves were the ones that were humble. As Peter wrote, he likely remembered Jesus taking that towel and tying it on himself to wash his feet in John 13. God is opposed to the proud. God blesses and gives grace to the humble. Even James 4:10 tells us to humble ourselves in the presence of the Lord. Peter reminds us that God is sovereign, even in suffering, and he assures believers that his eternal purposes are being accomplished and they must persevere. And the context of that verse is through trials and suffering. He gives us grace, whether we go through testing or suffering, persecution, that we must persevere and he will exalt us. Our attitude must be the humility, humble mind, the mind of humility. God has his timing to lift us out of our trials and difficulties, and our attitude must be one of submission to him in humility. And again, I'm just going to skip ahead here, but the distinguishing mark of those who are called his disciples and those who are members of the church is love for God and for one another. We are known by our character, ladies. We're known by our affection. And the things that are important to us and precious to us, we're in a word, we're known by our love. And that's the beautiful reminder. As believers, this is how we live out the gospel transformation in our lives and visually and verifiably show the gospel message is as powerful as it claims. So let's seek to show hospitality with the purpose of the Great Commission and apply the one another's we've studied to be a visible witness and tool for the gospel, ladies.